search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCers, to episode number 162 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo queue educational and motivational podcast. Curtis, today we're going to be exploring a fellow soldier fallen in the battlefield, Curtis. All right? We're XFSN Saber. I think I'm pronouncing that right. He posted a video saying why I'm quitting League of Legends. And it got 160,000 views. For people that don't know who he is, he's been very prominent. I've seen him in the comments a lot of the time. Not him personally in the comments, but people say, is there any content like, you know, Curtis and Nathan? His name gets popped up a lot for AD carry sort of stuff. And he says that in this video, the TLDR, he's quitting the game and he's going to TFT.
Okay.
So, you know, we always say how long that lasts because we know from experience, challenger players, the players that played a long game, they always manage to find their way back to the game. You know, they've built so much experience with the game and so many good memories that, you know, sometimes people take their break for the year or two, come back. Who knows? Maybe this is it for him. I want to talk through some of the points that he went through in the video because you know how, Curtis, we talk about, we learn a lot from specifically old school members of the game. Like, he's been playing for 10 years. Like, he started when he was like 18. I think he's like 26, 27 now. So this is a very old school player, similar to us. And it's really interesting to see how they talk about the game and how they view the game, you know, compared to us and sort of what we do with our process. So I will say that this is a very humble response from him. This is not us saying, like, dissect, like, you know, why is he quitting the game? Like, dude, if you're not having fun in the game, you know, you don't have fun in the game. I just want to cite sort of the reasons why he's not having fun in the game anymore. So the first thing he sort of, you know, talks about, it's a lot about the state of AD carry. And obviously I'm a jungle main and Curtis is a mid lane main. So, you know, obviously we're not going to have the entire picture of the whole what's actually going with AD carry. But I want to start here, Curtis, to give you some context. Yeah, he sort of shows some clips of like past seasons, like team fight and stuff like that with AD carry and what it looks like now. Mm. And it's really interesting the clips that he chose to take. So let's look at the clips here. I mean, for people that listen on Spotify, it's quite simple, really, what happens here in these clips.
Okay. So I've not seen this. I genuinely have no idea what to expect at the moment. So the first clip we're looking at, is this an old one?
No, this is like, these are the, I think the last day of his stream or something like that. This is, I think what, basically he sort of is insinuating that these things was the, what happened in these clips, it was the sort of the breaking point. Like all the things that have led up to it, but these were the breaking point, right?
Okay.
So really simple here. He's showing a clip here at 24 minutes. He's 0-5 as a Caitlyn. With one item, Yomu's and collector. And he's talking about here how there's too much damage in the game. And he hates here how the fact that he can get one shot here and killed by Fizz. So the Fizz is, I think, 10 and 2. And he says he gets ulted here. And then he dies to the Fizz. And he's quite upset about this, essentially, right?
This is not real, though, right?
What do you mean?
This is a meme.
Oh, no, Curtis, it's not.
That's okay. Real.
What do you mean?
As in, like, he used that as a clip.
Yes. So this is what I'm a bit looking concerned about this video. Yes, I agree. So again, very interesting. Again, like, you know, this could just be through tilt or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, so essentially, and I think when he tabs as well, the Fizz is 10 and 2. Like, if you're an assassin and you're not one-shotting someone, like, I think there's probably something wrong with the game. Look at the state of the game right now.
Right, it's a 13-stack Magi's, 2-item Fizz, 2 levels up. Right.
All right, so that's the first clip he talks about.
Okay.
And then he has a second clip here. And he's basically saying here, so I'll just quickly just talk about the state of the game here. So his team's 9 kills, so the enemy team 18 kills. So they're getting, you know, dominated. He's against a Yasuo here. He's in mid lane and Yasuo's laning. He's 3 levels behind the Yasuo. He's with the support. He has 1 item. And
Yasuo actually has an IE. Crack an IE. It's like the most damage in the game.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, right?
And pure damage.
Basically, he says here that this is illegal, that Yasuo is allowed to get away here. He did 370 auto attack. He almost dies, burns all his summoner spells. And he's saying that that shouldn't happen, right? Compared to past seasons, right?
Okay.
So, so these were definitely some interesting to be using these examples. Like, if we're really realistic here, guys, this all should make sense, and this is how the game should be. So, a very interesting choice of clips. Would you agree, Curtis?
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to dissect this? Because you can dissect this, or do you
I do want to just dissect this. So, again, the sort of the general gist of it is when I was saying that AD carry is just really unfun.
So let's get specific. What was the specific criticism he made using these two clips?
There's too much damage in the game.
Too much damage in the game. Okay, let's first address this, okay? Okay, well, I like to run a thought experiment, okay? Well, what's the alternative? Is the alternative that we tone it down a little bit? Or is the alternative that we tone it down a lot? Let's visualize what might happen. Okay, let's say we live in a world in which a 10 and 2 Fizz does not one-shot a full glass cannon 0-5 Caitlyn, who is two levels down. Well, if we live in that reality, then that kind of breaks what the game is designed to do, right? The game is inherently a snowball-oriented game, right? So you are rewarded for staying alive and you're rewarded for being strong through XP and gold, getting you more items. The kit itself of an assassin, specifically Fizz, is designed to literally assassinate squishies. If you don't take exhaust, if you don't take bone plating, you don't build any MR, you're going to get one shot. That's
essentially his job. If you're a Fizz your Ornn's in front of the AD carry and it's going to, Fizz can't play the fight. It's
right.
very difficult.
So if Fizz can't one shot a squishy that is building no resistances, then that champion specifically doesn't have a role. So, you know, if we live in a world in which Fizz doesn't one shot an AD carry in that specific scenario, then, you know, the game would be very unfun. I feel like the game would be incredibly unfun. It would be too forgiving. And if the game was too forgiving, if a 0-5 Caitlyn could survive in that situation, then what else would that mean? That would mean if he was even, if he was 0-0, then a Fizz would stand no chance at all. It'd be way too difficult to kill a Caitlyn, and Caitlyn would be broken by concept.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, when you're dissecting a lot of these arguments, you can tell straight away that they're not based in reality and they're not logical. They're completely emotional statements.
Yes.
You know, I've had a series of hard games. You know, I maybe don't know my matchups as well anymore in this current meta or this current patch, or the game has evolved a little bit and I can't do what I did in previous seasons. And as a result, I'm getting punished in solo queue. And a convenient explanation for that, you know, at my fingertips, is that I keep dying. I'm taking a lot of damage here. That surely is the problem, right? So it seems like a very lazy, you know, I'm just going to say outright, just a lazy, I guess, excuse for poor quality gameplay. Now, again, if you don't enjoy the snowball nature of League of Legends or the aspect of League that is, you know, the punishing aspect of League of Legends, then that's okay. But I think it's very hard to make the conclusion that League has too much damage, personally.
He talked about how the durability patch didn't really do anything and stuff. But
right. Okay.
Curtis, talking about, I mean, looking at these two clips, the first one specifically, his 0-5, would you ever be looking at a situation in a game, reviewing it, at a 0-5?
Well, actually, the first one is so ridiculous, I feel like it's not even worth our time commenting on it. The second one's I think, a little bit more interesting because in this scenario here, he's lost his bot tower. Looks like they got dominated bot side, right? If you're a Caitlyn, what was their map? It looks like they went Caitlyn, Milio, bot, and they lost lane that hard that they lost their tower, and, you know, you're 0-2, and you've got a Duskblade versus a two-item Yasuo. What do you expect to happen?
It's end of review many, many minutes ago.
Well, even if it's not end of review, you're in an objectively very bad situation. So if Yasuo, who's building full damage, straight i.e. that build specifically, is full glass cannon, full damage, if you don't die there or take a significant bit of damage, then again, what is the point of the game, right? Like, the game fundamentally breaks. So I think that these are very strange clips to use that argument, and it to me screams emotional, a hugely emotional response.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, our view of the game, Curtis, and what we talk about, the snowball aspect of the game, you know, again, like, I'm not reviewing a game where I'm 0-5. Like, you know, it's just, especially, maybe even more, I mean, dude, any role, dude, if you're 0-5, come on, you know, let's get serious here. So I think that, yeah, I agree. He's using these as an emotional, you know, a couple of bad games happen.
And well, I'm assuming there's other points we want to cover here. So I think it would be easier if we had more context to see what else he says. Because, I don't know what he actually says in this video.
All right.
And then we can kind of refer back to this because I'm assuming this is like a piece of the puzzle that gives us, a bigger picture here.
So, I mean, I don't really want to show the other clips, but he basically showed other clips of like team fight in and like many seasons ago.
Right.
And I mean, actually, no, who cares? Let's get it up.
Yeah, I want to look. I'm intrigued.
I think it was like just all these tanks, like this clip here, like he's saying here. So this was, as we can see here.
33 minutes in the game was 7-3.
And, you know, he's against a Nunu and a Gragas and, you know, like Orianna's missing the ult and stuff, and he's sort of saying that this is like, I think, like better gameplay. This is like the
dream. I mean, this is just a completely different situation. right? Like, you can't compare these situations.
I know.
I mean, you're sitting there whacking away at a double tank comp, a Nunu and a Gragas, and you've got, you know, a Galio frontline if we go back here, and you're just free hitting. I mean, yeah, of course, no matter what season you're in, you're going to do a, you know, you're not going to do a shit ton of damage to a tank. And of course, it's going to feel fun. Everyone would love to be an AD carry in this situation. Who wouldn't want to be an AD carry in this situation? It's pretty simple.
No one's hitting you. You don't have a fizz on you. You know, Orianna's not really much threat.
The comment that I will make there, and I think this is important to understand, is that the game has evolved massively in the sense that, okay, so I'm going to speak from my experiences coaching through the years of 2017 to 2019. Now, back in those time. Let's actually even talk about our experiences even when we played high level in our server. No, I'm not going to say OST in 2015 was the highest level of play in the world, but we played at a high level in our region, right? Now, you know, a lot of the concepts that we take for granted today, such as multi-threat, weren't really a given. We didn't really have a way to label why particular things happened in a game, right? So let's say, you know, okay, the traditional way of dealing with a AD carry would be, okay, well, we need frontline someone to tank that AD carry's damage, and we need a tank on our team so our AD carry can do damage, and then therefore that's the way a team comp should look. We need frontline, you know, we need the balance of CC and non-CC. We need this very beautiful structured composition as if we're going to fight front to back and they're going to fight front to back. That was kind of like Dive and Assassins weren't really viewed through a competitive lens that much. Now, there were niche scenarios where you would see a Talon or maybe a Zed or something like that, but for the most part, you know, the game, especially at the competitive level, people loved these classic front-to-back, frontline-esque compositions. As the years went on, people realized that, okay, instead of having people to tank damage, we can completely throw that out the window, and we can actually deal with the same situation by just diving people, having multiple dive-oriented champions, and using terrain and using vision to bypass the front to back altogether. There's an idea of that we don't even need to front to back. We don't need to straight front to back in team fight. We can maybe have someone split pushing on the side. We can have multiple divers that kind of collapse onto one person and assassinate one target. There started to be a shift in the way, and again, inspired from the East, and I think the East were much better at this than the West, the idea that we didn't have to pay this traditional kind of front to back style and that there were other ideas. And so I think that, you know, we always kind of viewed Assassin through the solo queue lens, but it slowly kind of seeped its way into competitive play. Now, over time, people realized, and this actually started to kind of become a self-reinforcing thing where, you know, competitive influenced solo queue and then solo queue influenced. I think people just took solo queue more seriously, I think, because...
Well, we'd say the player base has gotten better as well.
Well, I would say that, but before we get to that point, the point I'm trying to make is that before, a lot of the picks in solo queue were like, that's just a solo queue pick. Now, in competitive, anything that works in solo queue, a lot of the time has been now been tested and put into competitive play because of the amount of creativity and the how well people understand winning fights. Winning fights isn't just viewed through this logical, this very like front to back, front line, no front line lens. You can throw that all out the window. You can have a, like a, you know, a Zed in competitive with an Elise or like a, you know, a Jace Elise or whatever it might be. And you can throw all the front line out the window and still work. Now, as a result, AD carries, I think they've obviously been given more tools, things like Gale Forces and things like that. There's been the introduction of better support items as well to make supports more relevant and anti-dive. And champs like Milio have been introduced to the game as anti-dive. Like, things have been put into the game to combat this and better items and stuff like that. But my point being is that, like, you can dwell on the past and look at these fights where you play this perfect kind of front-to-back fight. And that, yeah, that was how a lot of games played out back then. But that was... the game has evolved and people have gotten better and people are now more creative and people know how to deal damage more creatively. People know how to use fog more creatively. People know how to think in the shoes of other people more creatively. And more importantly, I feel like the general knowledge of like high-low players, they know how to think through multiple lenses. Like, a mid laner knows how an AD carry feels way more than back in the day. Like, back in the day, I feel like roles were more kind of independent in a way.
It's all about me, what
yeah,
I want.
It was more about me. But it's now like, in order to be a great mid laner, you do have to understand a lot about a jungler or a top laner or an AD carry.
Especially if you're a challenger player. You need to, definitely the standard now is you need to have some idea of big picture about what everyone, your team, and the enemy
team
wants
really
in the game.
And that really wasn't as much the case back really in the day. You didn't need that as much. It was more about just you. Mm. Like, an Orianna could just be good at ball placement and not have to think overly crazy about all these changes because there was less tools and so on and so forth. Now, my point being is that, like, you can, I'm sure you can make a very similar argument in many other sports, in many other industries. Like, back in my day, like, okay, let's use a real life example. Let's use the example of Australian football, right? Australian football, not even that long ago, was just played. So this is our local sport, we call it Australian Football League, where the professional level, not even that long ago, like someone like 30, 40 years ago, whatever, they were still working full time.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, in the 90s, and playing, like, working as electricians or accountants or whatever, and playing the game casually. And as a result, the level of play was so low that if you had any remotely, I mean, it was just boot the ball, like the equivalent of European football, essentially kick the ball as long as you possibly can, flip a contest and hope that you can score. But now it's like, they want to maintain possession of the ball and pass it down the field and more handballs, less kicking. The game evolved. Sure, if you could go back in time and implement this strategy now, you would have a lot of success, but like, the game's just changed. So you can either be back in my day, you know, live in that kind of fantasy world, or you can adapt with the way the game is. And no one's really forcing you to play the game if you don't enjoy the way it is. If you want to, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's the nature of League. It's just, it's always going to evolve. You can't latch on to the past. And we've worked with clients like that, right? And actually, we'll talk about this later on in the episode, where they can't let go of the past. They have too much mental baggage. Actually, I want to talk about it now, because I think it's actually...
That's great. I was going to talk about this, because this is one of the points in his video. He talks about... feels like, you know, he literally said, that's why I said it's a humble video, you know, everything I'm saying could just be because, like, I'm just pretty bad right now. And so he can't get to challenger apparently anymore.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, challenger in the past. So yeah, that is a huge aspect of it, whether maybe he doesn't admit it or not. Like, especially we see with our clients, like, if you're, this is what happened with me as well.
Yeah.
The game can get really unfun really quick when you're holding on to past achievements and not thinking excitingly, okay, what, going back to that game 0-5, you know, instead of showing that clip, why am I in a 0-5 position? Why did Yasuo get fed here? Maybe there's something I could have done. Maybe there's some, I'm not going to say the AD carry is going to roam, but maybe there's some pressure that I could have put somewhere. Could have played lane phase better or something like that. You know, these more curious, just ask.
Lack of curiosity. But I want to empathize with him in his situation, right? He's created a brand, right? Through that of being the high elo challenger Caitlyn player.
Mm.
If he can't, in his mind, what he's probably thinking of, like, if I'm not challenger with Caitlyn,
it's like an identity crisis.
It's an identity crisis. And it's, and again, that is inherently emotional, right? Because in his mind, it's not attacking his hobby. It's maybe potentially attacking his levels of self-worth and self-confidence and livelihood and you name it, And that's scary. But, you know, he probably, you know, at the end of the day, if he was probably honest about it and spoke freely about it, like, guys, I'm actually stuck in master. It's not like people are going to be like, you know, he's catastrophizing the situation a lot and probably thinking through all these weird scenarios when it's not the reality. So I want to empathize with it. I can understand what sort of situation he's probably in. I want to talk about two case studies here really quickly as like a comparison here. When you play a champion for a very long time over multiple seasons, especially if you've played them for like years, in like 5+ years, it is very, very difficult to, I think, continually climb with the same champion. I feel like it's actually sometimes in a way harder, because unless you're, again, open-minded and curious, because what happens is that you have success with a champion in one way or in a specific elo bracket. And then you latch onto it because it's given you success. And when the game changes, the runes change, the builds change, the start, the matchup change, whatever. It's an emotional thing for a lot of these people. It's not logical. It's not like, oh, this doesn't work anymore. I'm just going to change my style and I'm going to win. I'm going to change to a better style and now I'm going to win more. No, it's not that at all. They're attached. And when they lose, their default response is, it's because I'm not playing that style. Mm. It's because I'm not XYZ.
It's because the game is not like that anymore.
Exactly. It's because the game is not like that anymore. I had a TF player that was kind of, not to say the same situation, but a similar situation where he played a lot of TF in the past, had success in a lower elo bracket with a particular style that just doesn't work as you climb higher. And then he had a bit of identity crisis. And what I said, look, in the past, if you came to me a year ago, I would have said, all right, you know what? Let's just sit down and we're going to work through and develop fundamentals and we're going to shift your style, whatever. You know what I said this time? I said, you're fucked. I'm not doing this. You are the best way to go about this is you drop the champ. It is easier to put that champ to the side,
learn a new champ from scratch,
learn a new with a clean slate, rather than trying to unfuck yourself for the next 3 months. Let's just put it to the side, come back 3 months later with a refreshed mindset. That's what he should do. He should throw Caitlyn out the window, punt it 1,000 miles this direction, and then learn a game to a champ that he's not really played before with a beautiful, clean, childlike mindset. That would lower his expectations. It would give him permission to fail and quote unquote look bad and give him an excuse or a reason that why he wouldn't be challenger. And he'd be able to enjoy the game again. And then as he learns the game through that lens, he'd be able to take those skills and apply it back to Caitlyn. But you know what? I was actually delusional. I shouldn't have been playing Caitlyn. No wonder I wasn't winning with Caitlyn because I was doing X, Y, Z. And then you'd be all good. So I don't make that mistake anymore. Clients like him, if he would have come to me, I don't even want to coach them on that champ. It's so difficult. It's not even worth it. So I think that's case study number one and raises a few important points. I'm going to take over the podcast and quickly talk about my experiences because I think this is such a beautiful
segue
here. So I came back from my 2-week break from to China and I was atrocious, dude. Like,
this surprised you?
It actually genuinely surprised. I knew I was bad with breaks.
Because a lot of people say, you know, coming back from breaks, so, you know, I've got to get back into my swing of things. Like, what are we talking about?
Well, I don't think I've had...
What's your definition of bad?
Well, I don't think I've had a genuine 2-week break away from the game like that in a long time.
Yeah, it's been years.
Years, probably. Like, I've always been in touch with the game. I'd play a game here and there or something. I had that one day in China where I played, but again, it wasn't... I mean, I was playing at an internet cafe. I wasn't really serious in a way. So, for me, I view it as like a 2-week break, right? Now, it was weird because... Okay, well, I would say it was actually conflated by two problems. It was obviously the 2-week break, but I changed my mouse and keyboard. So that was like the double compounding effect. But anyway, long story short, that first week, it was shocking. Like, I'm talking, I think I had a 27% win rate over, you know, 20 games, whatever it was. It was shocking. Like literally losing all my games, like soul losing the game for my team. And it was a very humbling experience. And what I loved about it was actually a fascinating experience because I'm like, wow, I know what it feels like to be a genuine high diamond master player. I actually felt it. I'm like, I know exactly what it feels like to be losing these games that I review with my clients. And I actually felt, because I had this disconnect, because actually there was a third combat effect. I was learning new champions as well. I was learning Jace and Talia, right? And I had this weird feeling where I'm like, wow, I'm actually feel like I'm playing pretty well. Like I feel like I'm
you feel like you're playing
I
well.
Feel like I'm doing okay and I'm losing. Mm. And this feeling washes over you where there's like this sense of helpless. It's like this feeling of helplessness where it's like, wow, is this it? Like, is there something, what's going wrong here? And what's interesting, I have that perspective where I'm like, Curtis, no shit, you're doing something wrong. You just got to figure out what it is. Mm. And so I just keep at it, get those three blocks in. Entering the second week, my threat assessment started to get a bit better, right? My muscle memory starts to connect. My mind, I'm able to now like have more muscle memory over my ability usage with my Talia and my Jace. I'm able to start thinking a little bit more holistically, tone down my deaths. Things are starting to click. And so all these kind of things clicking into place. And I couldn't actually tell you specifically what was going wrong. It was like my feel of everything was off. Like I didn't think I could die here, but I would die. I was too tunnel vision in what was in front of me here, and I wasn't aware of my surroundings, and then I would just be too late to something or just miss an ability or something would go wrong. It was just a lot of little things leading to losses. And
so you're saying that it's very easy that you've seen people just gloss over. It's so easy to gloss over those things.
It's so easy to lose your mind in that Elo bracket. Yeah. And it's been a very great experience for me because I felt like I haven't felt like that in a very long time. And now, like, I feel really confident. Like, now I feel like I'm kind of back into my rhythm. And now I just got to get games in. I'm, like, winning most of my games now. But it actually coincides beautifully with two comments I got from master players in my program. They said to me this. They said, Curtis, when I first got master tier, you kept saying, you know, there's this massive gap between master and challenger. And I was always like, yeah. I didn't understand what you meant. These players basically said to me, they said, it's only now kind of getting into it that I've truly realized how little I knew as a master player and how big the gap was. And what they said is that, it's the small things. It's a lot of small things. And, you know, I can see there's this moment in a master player's journey where they're like this blind kind of, it's like you don't know what you don't know. And then there's this moment where it all clicks. It's like, holy shit, there is this ocean out there of things, like little things, like understanding why a jungler would do that or how a top laner. Like, again, it's all stuff outside of your lane, your role, you know. It's like all about other people and why are other people doing what they're doing and how that impacts your decisions and what you do with a wave or macro decisions, right? And that's how I felt like I was on both sides of that. I could look down on my situation and I could empathize with the client and how you'd be lose your mind in master tier. Hmm. And so it was a very humbling experience. And I think for me, I feel like I could understand the client a lot more now than I did before. So that was my little experience there. And the only reason, because I could have easily gone down that rabbit hole where, you know, Challenger 900 LP last split, struggling in Diamond this split, games this split stupid or whatever it is, like blame XYZ. And yeah, I would say admittedly, like there was some shitty matchmaking. But like I just accepted it. I'm like, all right, fine. I'm going to have shitty matchmaking. Yeah. It doesn't matter because I'm playing bad league. Mm. You know, you just cut the crap and you just get into the details. And as cliche as that sounds, that's the only thing that works.
Yeah, review's the medicine.
Yeah,
it's a really good point. I like that about, I've been doing this series on my YouTube channel where I talk to challenger players and they sort of show me a game that they played really well. And I did one with Perry, who's like a NACL player in the second league, and he did a Viego game, and like just like the thing that I just noticed, I mean, I've reviewed so many games, just like the speed of his clear and efficiency, it's just like it adds up a lot, dude. It's really big, you know. Like I think he was able to like double crab a Karthus And that just changes the game. Mm. Like, it's just like huge. And he, like, his team's all Intin at this point, by the way. But if he wasn't able to do that, when I saw that, I was like, ah, okay, well, this makes sense. Why is this on 1,000 LP play, you know, versus maybe a Master Tier of Jaeger that I'm looking at, you know, just the speed, the decisiveness, the confidence. Yeah. So, again, but it looks like the same game. Like, anyone could watch it and be like, yeah, you have double crab people before, but like, you know, have you? Like, you know?
Yes, I think Gurren is a great example of that.
Yes.
The speed and the quality of the decision making. Mm. Again, anyone can sit there and pause that VOD and be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I could do that. But do that in game.
Consistently.
With how fast the game is moving, like, you got to know where you're going, what's going on, why do I go here? Should not go for that fight. Okay, when I do go to that fight, how do I play that fight? It's the consistency and the speed of the quality of those decisions.
People don't think about that much, about the speed and stuff, you know? Like, they think it's the same decision, but if you execute it quicker, like, even, I mean, I don't know from a mid lane perspective, but I'm going to assume that sometimes people don't clear the wave as fast as they could with abilities, and they get a faster reset off, and they're 3 seconds early for maybe a fight.
That is a thing, but what I notice more, it's the speed of knowing what to do with the wave.
I see.
So, like, there might be a wave arriving, and then, like, there's a difference between, like, should I insta-shove this and quickly base so I can do that? Or some players, like, they might hit it a bit and be like, wait, what am I doing? I should just be shoving this and doing something else. And then it's like, you know, you just waste like 2 or 3 seconds. I actually did a review this morning. We actually, believe it or not, we actually covered something similar it was a gold 4 review in my below platinum program with a Pantheon. And I've got Milk Puddle, who's a mentor in that program. He's a Pantheon player. And he said, I can tell you're not, to this Pantheon piece, he says, I can tell you're not thinking right. He's like, you're thinking too much about killing the enemy. When your mindset should be, we're not interacting anymore with this guy. You should just be hitting the wave and already thinking about R-ing to the sides. And that lag, that brain lag in there.
Missed opportunity.
Led to a missed kill on topside. Yeah. And that is playing Pantheon.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're now 2 seconds late. Why are you even directing any remote bit of attention to this guy? You should be already thinking about, well, where do I R, you know? So, like, on certain champs, that matters more. Yeah, for sure. That's definitely a thing.
Going back to the, so you're obviously back on track now, and it's all good. And you never had a really big break for 2 weeks. I mean, I generally, I haven't had a break at all for my league at all ever since I started playing properly again after Direwolves in 2019.
You might have like a few days, but not nothing significant.
I mean, when I have a break a few days, I'm the opposite. I play insanely well because I have clarity, you know.
I think that's the difference, right? Like, you don't lose your muscle memory over a few days.
Yeah, that's right. That's the first.
It's like when you lose your feel. I lost my feel.
I don't know what that feels like.
I felt really foreign to the game. Yeah. Like, this is actually an interesting point. So we coach a shit ton, right? Yeah. We coach so much. We coach like every day.
I've seen a lot of odds.
Hours and hours every day, right? Yes. So what actually happens is that I feel like I don't know if you resonate with this. You feel you feel one with the game. Like, you just know the client and what their problem is and how to fix it. And you're just so, I don't know how to describe it. Like, you're just so connected to the game. Like, nothing confuses you. You know, like, everything makes sense. Like, you have this feeling when you're watching the VOD. It's like, yep, that's that. Boom, that's that. And
a big part of that is because of pattern recognition. So many patterns in players of the junglers that I coach, but also the opponent. Like, I can see a pattern. I can already see instantly in a VOD. I know from this moment at 1:30
what's going to happen.
That we should be, as Udyr, we should be contesting the Jarvan on his Blue and his Grom because he started bot. Like, I already have done that review a million times, right?
And it's just like going it again. And yes. And so you have this feeling where it's like you're just rocking up. You just know what you got to say, right? When I came back from that break, the first coaching session, I struggled really hard. Like, I felt really like dissociated from the game. Like, I felt like this massive disconnect. I'm like, I actually had to like look at the details. Like, usually
it's like problem solving in your brain.
Rather than just like pattern recognition.
Yeah.
Like, this is just, you know, we use that quote, this is just another one of those when we coach. Everything is just another one of those. It's very rare that there's a scenario where I'm like, well, I actually am going to bring a clip today in the Curtis's Clip Corner where I'm actually genuinely confused. But yeah, usually it's just another one of those, and it's just kind of going through what we know. But every moment felt off for me, and it was really hard for me to like break down what the core learnings were. And it took me, I would say, a good 2 days to ease into that. Be like, oh, wake up and like get my brain thinking about the game again. Because you got to remember, when I was gone, I wasn't not only not playing League, I wasn't even really able to think about League.
Mm.
So I was like completely taken out of that whole thing. And it took me so long to recalibrate. So like taking a genuine two-week break, like it was really intense. Really, really, really intense. And I think I'm going to do it differently next time when I come back. I think I need to figure out a way to reintegrate. Like, I think I need to like play normal games or something. Like, I don't think I would go directly into ranked.
Play again. On a second game. Really? Even for you?
Yeah. I felt so disconnected from the game.
What did it feel like when you touched your mouse and keyboard?
Mechanically, I felt fine. The mechanics weren't the problem. It was like, I was reacting to everything.
There was no anticipation.
There was no anticipation. And you just can't play League like that.
No.
It's just dumb. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, a learning experience nonetheless. So going back to Saber.
Let me look at the rest of my notes here. So, yeah, so, I mean, I sort of laughed at one of his points at the beginning where he sort of was talking about, yeah, again, damage in the game. He says, Demonic Embrace is too much damage, you know? And whenever I hear people complain about items, I always just think, and like damage, like from an items broke, it's like, that is not the reason when I review my games, I'm not losing the game because Demonic Embrace too much damage. Like, it's actually comical to me at this point.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You know, like, I am making so many fundamental errors.
Yeah, but you're not saying that, yeah, there will be broken items.
Absolutely.
There's going to be broken champions. But that's the last thing.
That would be like point number, but that was like one of his opening lines, which is, again, really telling of a player. Yeah. Where their mindset is, and especially he even calls himself like potentially a jaded AD carry player, you know. So, but yeah, so I sort of want to go to another topic here, you know, talking about fun, Curtis, you know, and sort of like we've talked about this a little bit before, but like redefine what does fun look like in League of Legends? People, you know, fun in League of Legends is different from fun in like a Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 lobby. Back in like, you know, 10 years ago, Curtis, when we played, you know, like you're playing with a bunch of people, usually like the best player in the lobby, like no scope and everything. You are like peaking like the scores, like every, like you can go into a lobby, do that really easily, right? If you're, you know, played a lot, like, you know, there's no like matchmaking or anything like that. And you know, we say that if the game was fun like that, League wouldn't be around or what it is today. You know, like the challenge of League is the fun part. The fact that it's really difficult, that's what keeps bringing people back. This is why the rank system is so competitive. And I think it's really important, because, you know, again, a lot of this video is sort of citing that it's just not fun to just get one shot and, you know, killed. Like, it's, again, from a perspective of me, like, so what is the other AD carry doing this whole time? You know, is that like, how are they, you know, you're still against an opponent. Like, sort of where I'm getting at here is that, yeah, just like we got to really define what fun is when people enter League
of Legends.
I just
think that fun, we've used the word fun a lot, but I think it's just the wrong word.
You know, we say like enjoy a champion, have fun with a champion.
Yeah, like I think we need to use the word fun because I think it's a very, I guess, globally like recognized word that everyone understands. But I think that the word that we should be really using is satisfied.
Satisfied.
I think satisfied is the word.
Putting in the work to learn a champion, going through that 70 game, like you just feel like you just don't know what you're doing. You're losing all these games. You're going past the honeymoon phase and stuff like that. You know, sort of like a relationship, like building up a relationship with the champion, right? You've got to go through the struggles.
Yeah, you're
that is
on.
Fun when you have those brilliance of moments. You know, when it clicks, that feels amazing. You know, you're playing flow state.
Think of anything in your life, right? Outside of League, you know, there are things that give you short term happiness and fun.
Short term versus long term, yeah.
And then there's things that give you deep satisfaction. When you think back to your quote unquote most, I guess, powerful moments in your life, or moments that you deem maybe that were the most meaningful to you, they were probably those satisfying moments. Like, again, we've said this on the podcast, like my greatest moment was winning the 2017 Split 1 Grand Final. That was, I think, the most satisfied and most content I ever felt in my life. That was like the happiest moment of my life, like winning that 2017 Split 1 final. And just because we put in that work, it was
and
a lot
was
of sacrifice.
Lots of unfun times.
A lot of unfun things that are incredible. Yeah. A lot of unfun things happened in that period of time, but it led to a very satisfying moment. Think about, working really hard for a job or an exam or a whatever. Or even like you said, I like your actually analogy there, like a relationship, right? There are happy, fun moments, and then there are like deep, you can have like happy, fun relationships or deeply satisfying relationships. I think that like this applies to everything in life. And I think League is just a great, it is a platform that can be interpreted many different ways. So again, it can be abused. It can be like a drug. It can be abused in a negative way. It can be used in a way as an escape. It can be that quote unquote fun, dick around, have a few beers, smoke a joint, then play.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that and just play it like COD or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can take it seriously and get deep satisfaction out of it and view it as a competitive outlet or a learn how to learn or make deep connections with friends, whatever it is you want to do. But the thing is that it is what you make of it. It has the potential to be something, but it doesn't have to be that. Again, like a relationship. Not every relationship you're in is going to be that deeply satisfying long-term relationship. But some are going to be that, happy one-night thing. That's just what it is. So you got to decide what you want to get out of your experience in League. And this isn't for everyone. So it's a deeply personal experience. You say that a lot. You're a big advocate of League being this deeply personal and private relationship.
Yep.
And that's what it is.
That's why it's one of the reasons I'm hugely against Duo, is that the solo queue journey by yourself, it's very lonely, but it's fun, man. That's what you
think. But that's our take. We recommend that, but we don't force that upon. We're not imposing that on anyone. That's what our take. Again, through the lens of if you want to improve.
Yes. We always need to bring it back to that.
Yes.
I actually saw a comment about our last episode where we talk about champion mastery, and we said that I had a point where if you have lots of points and you're really stuck with hundreds of games, that's actually a good indication that you need to actually change the way you view the champion. Like, there's probably huge things that you're not thinking about. And I saw some comments saying, you can't say that, about some, one tricks, like they enjoy, like they're not toxic players.
Right.
They don't have toxic narratives, but like, that still is, again, they can enjoy that, but they're not looking to improve at that point, sure they enjoy it. But if you want to improve, and you're stuck with the champion with thousands of games, then that's a good indication that you're probably viewing the champion maybe even one ability incorrectly.
Yeah. It is kind of weird though, and like I would say the main difference in why a lot of people get confused with League is that like at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, it is a competitive game, right? There is a winner and there is a loser. So we can use all these like fancy analogies and talk about it like a painting or an art or a relationship, but at the end of the day, it is still a competition.
Yeah, if you're getting to the top of the ladder. You always use the example of like last split, like the two players like Daystar and Kisei on our server. Mm. You're not getting higher than them if you're not better than them.
That's
end of story.
And there is things that you could do better that will increase your likelihood of winning in a game, right? And there is things that you do that will diminish or lower your chances of winning in the game. Therefore, we can make the argument that there are decisions that are objectively better, right? One decision is better than another one. And then therefore, like there are things that actively bring you towards a higher level of play and things that make you a lower level of play. Like this is all stuff that exists, So, I think for him,
also about where his focus is as well. Like part of the fun is like it's his focus. So it was about the damage. And I feel like if you have like a negative... I mean, not negative, but if you're focusing on like I guess the negative aspects, it's like I keep getting one shot versus the positive, how can I dominate lane phase more as Caitlyn? I think where people put their attention is really important as well.
Yeah, but again, the way I'm viewing this whole thing, Nathan, is that I'm going to bring it back to the pyramid, the four stages. You know, everything we're talking about here is that we're talking about stage one, stage two. Really, everything is stemming from stage four. Him at an identity level, right? Like you can make an argument stage three, maybe. Him at an identity level, he doesn't actually know why he plays League. And he's having an identity crisis. He had the, again, I'm going to play back what I said before. He had that idea. I'm making a lot of bold assumptions here. So take everything that I'm saying with a pinch of salt. I don't know him personally and I don't watch his content. So I can't speak for, okay. So what I'm saying.
Well, his first line is, I'm not having fun with
right.
the game anymore.
So I'm just going to keep that in mind as I'm going through this, right? Based off what I've seen here today, you know, the vibe I'm getting is that he doesn't know why he plays League. He had this idea that I'm a challenger, Caitlyn. I'm the best. I'm a, you know, this educational challenger, Caitlyn, content creator, whatever. And if I'm not challenger, if I'm not quote unquote great, amazing at Caitlyn anymore, then what am I? And so if that isn't the case, he's going through this period of like, well, I can either change. Obviously changing his identity now to that TFT guy. But is that a Band-Aid solution? And he knows deep down he doesn't really want to do that. Because that's just an excuse for him because he can't actually get back right now doing what he's currently doing to be that challenger, Caitlyn. So he can either fix the process that he's actually going about things to maybe become that quote-unquote challenger, Caitlyn player again, or he can fuck it off altogether and try something different, you know? So I don't know what he wants, like deep down, what's deeply satisfying for him, but I feel like he actually needs to do some deep diving and introspection to feel like what does he want to get out of his time playing the game? Because no one's forcing him to play League.
No.
Right? And so, you know, it feels like to him, and even by the look of his bed behind him, he's got some shit that he needs to sort out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, one of our favorite questions, Curtis, is you got to think about why you're playing the game.
That's right.
About understanding your journey, understanding how the game works, understanding the snowball nature of the game. And
not understanding it. Why does that mean? And accepting it and owning it and just embracing it.
Yes.
It's like, it's not just understanding that the game is chaotic. It's like, embracing the chaotic nature of League, you know?
Embracing the chaotic nature of League is one of our favorite quotes as well.
And we're having this conversation off camera about, you know, it's the same thing with like, you know, this ties back to our Jonathan Brown conversation. Jono Brown, his major, what he loved about League, right? You call him a mentor of ours or whatever, is that League mimics the real world. The real world is fast moving, fast paced, technological innovations, jobs are coming and going, skill sets are coming and going. You can either go with that and be the type of individual that knows how to learn, is able to put down something and learn something else, not get too attached to whatever's happened in the past and thrive in this fast moving environment, or you want to be left behind. Right? With AI and everything coming out and all these new technological advancements, the world we know today is going to be unrecognizable in 20 years from now. So you can either live in the past and wish the world was the 70s and stuff. And I agree with you. I wish that too. But you got to move on.
I wish we're Caitlyn in season 5.
I wish everything was Caitlyn in season 5. And the reality is that League, and we believe, and what Jonathan Brown believes, League is a great teacher of this skill set. Forces you on a fortnightly basis, essentially, to get with the times.
Every new patch, learn how to learn.
Get it with it done. And the best players are actually great at this. OnZ says, right, he actually doesn't call himself a challenger player until he gets challenger.
Oh, I love that. Me too. Same here.
And I, on my server, I've got the diamond icon. Yeah.
And yeah, Discord,
I've got
rank,
the diamond.
Yeah.
At the moment, I've got the diamond icon on my server.
Oh, that is so good. I love that. Yes.
You know, you got to earn your way every
always,
split.
Every split,
the
every
game
day.
Is changing. Just because that's you right. were one rank on one season, well, one split, doesn't mean you.
Yeah.
There's no deserving.
I know. You always see people say, like, they're like a rank one player. It's like, do not call yourself rank one unless you're rank one right now.
You know how there's like, this is what I've realized. And again, this is my, we have some controversial takes. This is my controversial take. If you have, like, what I've noticed, a theme. You know, we talk about toxic, people write in, I've got toxic friendship groups and, you know, I was playing with this person and they put me down and they, you know, had mental baggage playing with this guy, whatever. The common trend or the trait of the individual that is that toxic person that brings that other person down is they were X rank in X season.
There you go.
right? Time and time and time again, they tell me about this friend. It's like, yeah, my friend that I used to play with that was really toxic, he always used to say that he was the best Janna in season two. Someone literally said that to me the other day. He said, really? Oh yeah, my friend, I kept bringing me down. I had to separate myself from whatever. He couldn't let go of the fact that he kept saying he was the best Janna in season two, and he kept talking about how good he was in season two. And I literally laughed.
It's laughable.
It's cringe. Yeah. That's genuinely cringe. Mm. It's like, it means nothing. It's below nothing.
Mm.
You know? And if
I mean, maybe an achievement there, but right. In terms of today's world, today's gameplay, it doesn't stack up.
It's like the person saying, oh yeah, I learned how to, you know, I knew how to use the computer. I learned how to use a computer back in 1995. Yeah.
You know? It's like, oh, that's cool, but probably no one really cares.
Everyone knows how to use a computer now. Yeah. You know? Like, cool. Right? And so I think, and especially if you're using that to justify your actions
today.
That's
right. That's the important
part.
That's the toxic part.
Yes,
that's the most toxic part.
And the entitlement, you know?
Achievements are important.
Right.
But, you know, it's a new day. Things are evolving. New day.
Move on.
Things are moving fast. All right, Curtis, we'll do our good old Summoner School Reddit. All right, today's post is very fitting for the podcast. This is got 114 upvotes and 37 comments. And this is from a user called Iron Lukey. Putting the broken by concept stuff to the test. 600 games from Iron 2... Who knows? Hey guys, the title is pretty self-explanatory. I'm a huge Curtis and Nathan fan, been following them for a pretty long time now. I'm a 33-year-old guy, married, quite average at games, very passionate about League, of course. League is my first MOBA. I played support and top, and now I'm learning jungle. I'm a big fan of that. I've been taking my climb pretty seriously for the past weeks, and I intend to keep doing so for a considerable amount of games, 600 games. So he's going to go for 600 games, applying all the principles the Broken by Concept guys have developed, 3-block process, review intake and responsibility, etc. I'm documenting the whole thing by taking notes about my process, tracking my learning objectives. I'm very curious to see where I'll end up at the end of those 600 games. It will be great to hit gold. I've been an Iron player for a few years now, but as long as I see myself improving, I'll be happy. If some of you are interested in my journey, here's my OPGG. I'm also sending weekly updates on a subreddit. Looks like here's a subreddit there. Okay, cool. Do you want to look at some of the comments, maybe? People are saying good luck and everyone's excited about him.
Great. So,
So what he did is, well, in the comments as well, he decided to, someone asked like any materials, something for Broken My Concept. And he loved the episode with Patrick. I think that was episode 50. And that was a really good example of showing someone. I mean, Patrick had huge responsibilities with his job. He had like a really, you know, high level job, as well as a family and married and stuff. And sort of just, I love these type of situations. It's sort of showing that anyone can improve at League. You know, League's not just like a kid's 18-year-old game. You know, like, I love these. My advice to you is to Make a video, dude. I think videos are better than writing. Like, I want you to do like a video, like a vlog. Like, this is me, like 1 month, you know, 2 months, 3 months. Like, you know, the chess episode that we sort of did. Like, she'll recorded like so much stuff. Like, you know, record your games as well.
And imagine if you can make a video like that.
Yes,
that would be huge.
That would be very important. I mean, that could be a huge video.
It could be a huge video, man.
Literally showing like, this is what my gameplay looked at Iron. These are the things and concepts that I'm missing. Yeah. This is what it looks like in gold now. Because again, that's something that we can't do. Because we can't just suddenly be an Iron player, you know. So yeah, I think that you actually have a huge responsibility to the community here. You know, and who knows, maybe you get from Iron to again Iron, or maybe Bronze, and like that's it.
But yeah,
that could be the reality. And then you can break down maybe some of the reasons why you thought that was the case and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, you listening to our podcast and applying a lot of principles, I assume you're gonna be a very logical sort of person here. And you know, again, like, maybe you're really going to struggle with, you know, a MOBA for a couple of reasons. Again, really breaking down, like, why am I struggling? Like, you know, talk about things that we talk about, like threat assessment that we talked about here. How you viewed champion pool cycling.
Yeah. Yeah, Iron's a tricky one. I'm actually currently in the program experimenting with giving different pieces of advice to Iron players. You know, at the moment, in my current In my current understanding anyway, I actually kind of believe that in iron, you shouldn't even main a champ. You know, but now he's actually a unique case because he said he's been multiple seasons iron, right? So he's not a what I would deem to be a big true beginner in the sense that he probably understands what all the champs do. He probably knows what all the items do. Like he probably actually understands like the basics of the game. So I don't know if he's actually what I would call like a true beginner in that sense. But I could be wrong. I don't want to make too many kind of assumptions here, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does. Look, I'm also not a massive fan of reviewing in this Elo bracket.
I agree. Get in the reps.
You got to just get in the reps. Like, I feel like, honestly, if I'm in... I mean, again, we don't know jack shit at the end of the day. Like, we're still trying to figure this out. But in iron, reviewing's not overly important.
You're sort of
especially
like,
note-taking. Like,
too much. That's a bit too much. And the reviewing... Like, you do review, but you review in the game, in your head, like, in a way. It's like, interesting, that situation, right. Kind of. You know, it's not like an official review.
Look, if I was going to review as well, like, that Elo bracket, it would really be like... First death.
Yeah, first death, correct.
Like, or maybe here's a one fight or gank that I just didn't work well. Why is that?
Ability That's it. Usage.
Like, really, like, I'm talking really short, sharp, and concise. And note-taking, like, okay, he probably already knows my thought process on notes, but look, I really think notes are just kind of overrated, especially at that level of play, because the goal... In this Elo bracket is that you want to develop as much muscle memory and feel for the game as possible. It's not even about what you understand logically. It's about how you feel about things like damage output, damage input, you know, how champions interact. Now, like, you got to figure out what works for you. And if you want to take the notes, that's fine. But my advice is if you were going to take them, keep them incredibly short, sharp, and concise.
So be so short. If you're writing more than 2 dot points a game, that's too many notes.
Yep, I agree. 2 short, sharp dot points should be more than enough per game. I'm interested nonetheless. You know, we'll, you know, keep an eye on you, hopefully, and we'll see how it goes and keep us updated. Maybe do another check back in as towards the end of the split or something like that. So, good luck. And maybe write in there if you watch this episode, let us know in the comments. Any other things you'll say about this one?
Nope. I love it. Cool to see. And again, cool to see the older community, you know, with responsibilities, you know, married and all that sort of stuff, got jobs, showing that, you know, League of Legends is a game for everyone. And it's an awesome hobby.
All right, let's get into the details, guys. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. All right, so welcome to Curtis's Clip Corner yet again. Now, look, this one... I don't know how valuable this is going to be to the community. This one's more of like a, you know, in the chess, chess.com or whatever, they have kind of like, there's like puzzles. So they give you like a board and it's like, figure out the best
play.
Yeah, figure out the best play. This is kind of one of these where like, I'm just more intrigued to hear your take on this. Okay. So this was from a review this morning and I was kind of conflicted about what to do, and I didn't want to sound like a Reddit analyst in my response, so I said I'm gonna bring this today. I want to get your take. So essentially the situation, and for those of you listening, it might be a little hard to describe. I would recommend tuning in on the video if you can, but essentially we're heading into the mid game. He's playing Akshan, right? He's 2-0, and essentially the scenario is that their bot lane Ziggs did a really good job. They've broken bot tower, they swapped mid. They rifted mid. They got mid tier 1 and mid tier 2. Okay.
Dude, he's got... The Ziggs has 2 items at 13 minutes. Yes. And he's 7-1.
Yes. So the Ziggs is out of control, right? Shot. So the Ziggs is out of control.
Yeah.
So what the Ziggs has said, which is actually super smart, which is exactly what I said without even... Like, I didn't know what he said, is actually trade off the dragon here.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're not going to win the scaling war into that comp. Yeah. And they're not going to win via dragon stacking. So what the better play is, it's actually spot on from Ziggs, is he's actually trading off dragon here, which is second dragon, and going straight top. And I'm like, this is an incredibly smart play, and this is actually the best play, right? Because think about it, right? If you actually think about this game, right? We're looking at the compositions here. They're never going to win scaling. They're gonna get destroyed. They're going to lose fights because Akshan can't deal with Tryndamere.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
In the
side lane, Akshan loses. And so... What
even
happens?
0-3, like, isn't trying to permanently out of the game?
Yeah, no. Well, like, right. Yeah, not even now. Like, honestly, even now, Akshan is not even amazing into Tryndamere. Okay, it's really actually quite annoying for Akshan. Yep. So you can never really kill him. So the problem is right now is that if you play for this dragon, you're just slowing down the pace of the game. Because let's say Ziggs rotates the bot, you have to wait 30 seconds, and then what? There's no towers mid, there's no towers bot. Then you have to go all the way topside. Mm. You're actually better off just keep pushing the pace of the game, keep pushing the pace of the game, and just get really far ahead with a shit ton of gold. So what actually happens, and the Arxalan here in this game, which is my client, actually came to the same conclusion. He wanted that as well. But he's bot side on this side of the map. So here in comms, Ziggs makes a really cool, he actually types it out as well. Ziggs types in chat, gives it a give drag. So he knows, he's actually aware at this point. He doesn't even want to contest dragon. So he's like, all right, I'm just going to get the wave and I'm just going to rotate up, right? So look at the scenario. Ziggs has even pinged on my way topside. He's gone topside. Pike's there, setting vision or whatever, like kind of hovering. Rengar's on topside. And we're going to freeze frame for a second. He's walking into the river. Now, he doesn't really want to do anything here. Like, his intention was just to rotate mid, essentially, so he can maybe go top or whatever, right? So then what happens is Kha'Zix kind of shows in the river here, clearing vision on the Kha'Zix on the enemy team. So he kind of walks up. And now, then what happens, he sees the Kha'Zix. And then what happens is it looks like Kha'Zix is split, right? So then Rengar pings on my way. And then he's like here, and then they go into this Kha'Zix, and then they try to one shot, and they obviously can't, and then they take a fight they should never be taking. And he pings back. He's like, he doesn't want.
Imagine Ziggs just looking at his team, clam fiesta, but he's like, oh god, this is a master tier game, right?
Yeah.
He's like, oh geez,
exactly.
This is just a kerfuffle.
And he doesn't want anything to happen. So you see what he just dissing and pings back here, right?
Yeah.
You'll see in a second. He's like, all right, play's done, we can diss here. And then obviously that's never going to happen in solo queue, right?
Yeah.
And then you're in this situation. And then there's this is so bad. Now, Trinity may go answer Ziggs on topside.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And then, they're just wasting time. Now, look, they don't, they end up trading a few kills. I think Rengar gives a shutdown. Two of them die. I think Ziggs ends up killing Trinity at topside or whatever and getting the tower. But, it just, ruined the game, in my opinion. And this was, one of those... It really ruined the tempo of the game. Now, the question, what I said in the review, right? This is what I said, and we'll get your take on this, was you got to not go for this play.
Mm.
You literally here at this moment, because Rengar pings on the way, you actually got to ping back, and you got to just either loop around, the long way, loop around here, or just, maybe sit here and wait and, sit out of stealth or whatever, and, ping assist and stop side or whatever, and, call this play off. But... It's if you look at it from Arxalan's perspective, it's so hard to
especially when you're ahead. You also think you can just win a fight.
Exactly. You're ahead, right? How hard is it? I feel like a Reddit analyst for some to saying that, because I'm from a pragmatic, actual decision, in game.
Yeah.
Are you actually gonna be able to say no to this? Look at it again.
No, you're not going to be able to.
Yeah, sure, in hindsight, you would say no.
Yeah.
But, it's so... I just feel
I mean, it was... Arxalan can be sit back and hit some auto-attack people and stuff here and there. I mean, again, I'm fine with this. I mean, the way that I always think about these type of situations...
what's the takeaway?
This is not the reason that I'm struggling to climb a master.
Right.
You know, so it's just a niche scenario. I played a game yesterday. I was in weird situations. I don't put really any value, because I just know that in terms of my total journey, this is not really that common.
Even if Ziggs died top and get shut down, you would still call that or whatever.
Well, I mean, I would go for this play, no matter what. And then you'll just learn, oh, that's interesting. And then the takeaways, the principles you could have is okay, Ziggs is a very good siege champion. He wants to be hidden in towers. I understood his perspective right now. But I mean, the key thing that here, he needs to know that he's going for this. When I go for in plays, I'm well aware that I'm going for in plays. I just send it. I'm ganking, really pretty big wave. Feel like they have no summoner spells. I'm just going to go send it here. You know what I mean? That's just a healthy way to think about the game.
So it's kind of like a now you know type niche scenario. Yeah. And that's kind of basically it.
Yeah.
Now there is a second play to this one. I'd love to get your take on this one as well. Okay. So let's take a look at this. So essentially we're later in the game. And the team start to do a siege on top side. Okay, so I won't actually even go further back. I'm going to freeze frame right here. This is the scenario. We see the enemy Ornn bot. We see the enemy Kha'Zix on the bot side jungle. Okay, he's now shoving out mid, and we see our Kled shoving out top. So it looks like they're doing a mid to top rotation, right? Because you see the Kha'Zix on the bot side, right? Alistar tries to flank onto this Kled with a Tryndamere. But there's just only two of them, right? So then the whole team collapse. So look at this. They get to this point, like, oh, he just thinks that the play's over, right? The play is over, right? Yeah. When you look at that. The play, like, you look at that. The entire team's collapsing. We knew Zai was mid, Kuz is on bot side. It's overkill for Akshan to move.
And I like that Akshan's just speed and decision making, straight back mid wave, right?
This is really good. And he goes back mid. I'm like, great. I love this when I saw it in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes back mid. And I'm like, I said in the moment, great, get good. I love that you go back mid. Keep mid shoved. He even pings here. You'll see in a second. Even blue trinkets for the Kha'Zix, right? And then they just die.
Yeah.
The team just die.
Yeah.
And what I said is like, this is just unlucky.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, this is, in my opinion, a fundamentally great decision.
Yes.
And you just got unlucky.
Yes.
And between the last play and this play, it was end of review.
Yeah.
The game was over. So, what do you think? Do you agree?
I think I like this clip. You said that initially you weren't sure there's going to be value. Mm. The value here is don't overanalyze things. Like, this is so real. This is solo queue. Oh, I love solo queue, dude. I love League of Legends because... Yeah, it gets really messy, you know? And like you can, again, in hindsight, obviously you can say, oh, I should have just gone there for my team. Like,
but you would never do that, right? Like, how would you ever know that?
I mean, it's sort of like a feel thing in the game. Like, there is an element, like, I sometimes even look for counter ganks that I know that the enemy jungler should really never be ganking this, but just the way he's sort of been playing, like, I'll sort of, like more percentage. Yeah, tendency of players. Like, it's like, okay, well, like, you're in the enemy team shoes. They're just going to send four people here and just send it. Like, you know, again, it's got to do with the game feel. It's hard to explain. Like, logically, you're correct.
This is high-level shit. But I think what you're... Going back to your point, I really like your old point, which is this is not the reason you're not climbing.
No, that's
this is
right.
a fundamentally good decision. Yep. Although, yeah, like, you're right. Like, if you have really great intuition and you had a great read on the enemy, there might be something there that you could, like, intuit. But that's, like... 0.00.
Yeah, I don't worry about that. Yeah.
This client is in Mazadir, not for these reasons.
No.
Yeah.
That's right.
I would agree with that. That's a really good point. I think I might use that next time. Like, we can get into it and we'll talk about it and distill the learnings, but like, let's not overemphasize.
When I ever start the overanalyzing thing, I always just cut it off. Like, because I can start feeling this is like, I just try and think about, because we have the luxury, Curtis, so we can backlog the 8,000 reviews that I've done. So I can think already, how many times is this situation coming up? Is it worth analyzing this? Is the principles that we're applying this actually really that replicable in this sort of situation? You know, again, like, this is really quick situation. You want to be good. You see a fight that looks like it's pretty much over, straight back to me. Both speed, decisive, beautiful, fundamentals, love it. And that's it.
Great. All right, moving on.
Now mailbag time.
Yeah, mailbag.
Oh, this is my intro. I always forget that I got an intro here, Curtis. Away we go. Mailbag. Jingle, jingle, jingle song. All righty then. Our first question here comes from Zach. The title of this email is Downfall by Ego. Ego is a very hot topic on this podcast, Curtis. We do like to explore the ego. The goods and the bads with it.
Yep.
You know, it's, I don't think it's just
positives
bad.
And negatives.
Hello, Zach here. I was hoping to update you on how ego completely ruined the player I had become. For background, I wrote into the Broken My Concept podcast a while back and last season peaked Masters 100 LP. But this was the start of the worst. Not only did my ego start to affect my gameplay, but it started to take a toll on my relationships. I started to treat people differently just because I had a new rank. Although many of them didn't believe I was able to hit Masters, it gave me no right to trash on a player. I could have taken that time to be a role model that they needed and helped everyone's process in the game, but instead, I took trash talking to new levels. This would later really come to hurt me because instead of focusing on what I did to make it to this level, I started to neglect my responsibility. The process was completely removed from my life after doing blocks for 2 years and started to create every toxic narrative available. Overall, it made me go back to old habits of having a bad relationship with League. Mainly, I started to blame teammates, not review games, and even started spamming games. And a big thing that started to affect me is playing a lot when tilted. I lost any confidence I had in myself. When the end of the season hit, I went from Master 100 LP to D4 in 3 weeks. I had pissed off basically every one of my friends, and on top of that, I had some IRL stuff that was affecting me. I thought it was over. I went into super big depression, and I didn't want to talk to anyone or do anything. I stopped being excited to wake up and even stopped listening to the podcast. I felt embarrassed about what I had done and didn't have any goals with League. However, after being depressed for 2 months, I started to go to the gym. This is when I really started to see a turnaround, and I was happy for the first time in forever. Been going to the gym now for over a month, and I have to say, it might be the best thing you can do for your life. My journey is now just starting again for SoloQ, so I'll keep you posted in the future. I just wanted to make sure that people don't make the same mistake of letting their rank change who they are, because we are better players who doesn't give us a right. Just because we are better players doesn't give us a right to judge people negatively because they're not as good as us. Taking your time to put other people down doesn't benefit anyone. The same can be said with negatively typing in-game. I understand that emotion is a huge part of League of Legends, but let this be a reminder to not let it take a toll on your health. It's also pretty crazy how easy it is to quit something after you have done it for so long in life. Doing block of solo queue for 2 years, I stopped for like a week and completely removed the habit that I enjoyed so much. My question to you guys is, how do the top tier athletes maintain being humble without letting their ego get in the way?
Wow.
Well, I love, see this, this is real.
Yeah, real.
This is what happens when, you know, you can achieve. I mean, this is, I mean, think of how many examples in, you know, he's asking about how athletes maintain. A lot don't, dude. Look at people like Mike Tyson. Didn't he go to prison and stuff like after that? He's being bankrupt. Yeah. You see people like Conor McGregor losing the plot and stuff like that. Like after they hit that, they're like these disciplined, stoic people. Their money changes people. You know, rank changes people.
Status,
right? So this is very human. This is very normal. And this is the fact that you're hyper aware, you've sent this email. This is great. Like, this is such a fantastic experience, you know, to be humbled. God, I always, the story of the, I mean, I'm not even going to say it, but the story of the Dalai Lama or whatever, you know, the story, you know, before he became.
No, I don't know.
He was like, had everything. Rich, I think it was like a prince or something like that, and everything. And then he like still realized that he was like depressed and stuff like that, and he like was seeking like what enlightenment is or sort of stuff. I don't know. I don't even know if it was Dalai Lama. It could have been someone else, but so
some guy out there.
Some guy out there who that we know of. That if you were to say the name,
right?
I think it was Buddha.
Right.
I think. Okay. I don't know. Again, I'm just skateboard. Yep. Someone in the comments will know. Anyway, so
yep, good mates with him.
Yeah. Anyway, there's so many awesome stories in history of not being able to. To let their ego get away. I mean, all right, so let's say for Oscar.
But I kind of feel like it's, is it possible to, I feel like you all go through that phase in some way, shape,
absolutely,
or form.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can ever skip that phase.
Especially if you've never been good at something in your life and then suddenly you get it. You know, let's say you know, it does, it's going to have a massive effect.
I think it's unavoidable. I think it's more of a matter of like to what extent it affects you. And I think that's where personality and people you surround yourself with, you know, comes into play. So I think it's not real. I think both me and you have gone through periods where ego completely takes over and blinds
100%.
You. And you don't even know it's happening. It's kind of you're in it. And
the great thing about League is it calls you out so quick, dude.
This is a massive lesson in humility. And I think that, like you said, it's so important for him because this is a lesson that he can take into his life through many other areas.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, it was going to happen at some point. Whether it was League or something else, it was highly likely going to happen no matter what, right? Sorry, what were you saying before?
Oh, just my League journey. I mean, I've gone through, even throughout the duration of this podcast, I have gone from heavy process, three block and stuff, to thinking I'd better than the process because I'm Nathan Mott and I've reviewed 8,000 jungle games. And then I play an extra three block that night, whatever. And like, I just get humbled so quick. And I'm like, all right, back to the process. It goes again here. And again, I guess it's like, I always like look at John Wooden, right? Like John Wooden is such an amazing example of extended success for extended period of time. And it's going for like, you know, not focusing on results, right? Just like, what is the best I can be today? Like, what is, you know, following the process? How can I just give my effort today? Like, I think that's just so, it's so powerful, dude. I love John Wooden's message. That's probably the pyramid.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at the pyramid of success here behind me. I don't know if you can see it on camera. But if you haven't, if you're not familiar with the pyramid of success, give it a Google search. There's a lot of great stuff. There was a quote, I was just trying to find it, but it's probably on there somewhere. But I think it's like John Wooden, he says something like, be more concerned with your character than your...
Yes.
He said something like that. It's always stuck with me, the message of it. It's like, be more concerned with your character. Be more concerned with one's character than their skill or something like that. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, when you're young and when you're... you know, you don't have perspective. And like you said, if this is the first thing that you've been really, really good at, it's near impossible to not fall into that trap. And I think that 2 months of being depressed in the grand scheme of things for him, I think is a small price to pay for an incredibly important lesson.
Mm.
So I think, you know, being a role model from that point onwards in his friendship group in you know, is a great way to kind of, I guess, be of service to people around him, you know? And, like you said, I think League is such a great tool to learn this, to be humbled, because you are all, there is always someone out there better than you at what you think you're good at, and they're going to humble you, or the game will humble you itself because it changed and what you were good at is not good anymore, and you're going to have to learn and evolve. And again, tying back to that whole, I guess the major theme of this entire episode is being adaptable in life, right? And being open to change. And you know, recognizing what's happened in the past, but not letting it, I guess, dictate your future actions too much. So, what was the question at the end? What did he say? How do athletes deal with it?
Deal with it.
Yeah. So I think what we said is that they don't, up until they have that painful experience, and then you kind of get perspective. Like, well, I was an idiot. And then you kind of get your shit together. I think that's kind of it has to go like
yeah,
that. I don't really know any other stories where it hasn't really been like that.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Incredibly, let's just try to think of incredibly humble athletes at the top of their game for long periods of time. That didn't have a downfall.
I mean, they typically all do have a downfall, right? Of some... I don't know of an athlete that has stayed at the top. Because with John Wooden's story, right? The reason I think he wasn't maybe in that situation is because he had to work so hard to get to the top. You know? Like he had to...
He didn't get this off for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He had to work for so long with shitty team after shitty team, trying to figure out the craft, trying to figure out the game for year after year after year after year. So then when he actually had success, he had such a deep respect for the game.
Mm.
It was impossible for him to have an ego, you know, as well as his age. He was also older,
very old,
right?
I mean, he probably did have the aspects in his life that helped shape him into that as well, you know?
Yeah, like, maybe as a player, because he was a player before that. Maybe he had experiences that we don't know of, right? Yeah. But as a coach, he didn't really have that whole... have success, get complacent.
No, I mean, I'm just thinking about the lessons he learned from his dad as well. I don't think he actually ever did. Remember, you know, so
his dad was really strict. Yeah. So I'm sure there are people out there. I just don't, I can't name any off the top of my head.
No. I mean, Faker in a way. I mean, we don't really know too much about Faker.
No, but Faker had failure, you know, like he was at the top, but then remember he had that really, when they lost.
But we don't know if that's a result of ego or not, do we?
No, but what I'm saying, what you're saying that...
No, I'm talking about like ego like destroys them, you know, like...
Right, you know, right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, skill's going to decay, right? But I'm talking about someone who like, you know...
Ego gets in the way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I use the examples like Mike Tyson and stuff like that. Who
right,
like on top
and Conor
of, like,
McGregor.
Had very big outbursts of ego.
Yeah, I think Conor McGregor and Mike Tyson are like probably two of the most...
Well-known
ones, yeah. But you know, this ties into a deeper discussion, which I don't think we want to get into today, which actually coincidentally was one of my biggest criticisms of actually Dr. K's content was he actually did, Dr. K did that episode ages ago with Bjergsen, did an interview with Bjergsen. And, you know, in this interview or this discussion I had with Bjergsen was talking about kind of like work-life balance and, you know, all that stuff. And then Dr. K was talking about kind of work-life balance. And then, you know, my take on that was like, as a professional athlete that is trying to achieve amazing things, there should be no balance. At the highest level, right? Whether it's with highest level of creativity or the highest level of like output in any industry, you kind of have to be fucked up.
Mm.
You know, like is the, what's the word? It's kind of like the chaos. It's like they live in the chaos in a way. Like, exceptional output has a cost, like an incredible sacrifice, or you have to be messed up in a way. Like if we're talking like the extreme, like Kobe Bryant, like how much he sacrificed to reach that level of perfection. Like Michael Jordan, like a lot of people hate it. He was an asshole, you know, like these people, like they're not what you think that, like, if we're talking the, like, if we're talking like the best of the best, they all have an ego. And some of them don't even manage it, but they can't, because that is why they are so good.
That's right.
Yes. So I don't think for his, you know, for the average person, you know, getting to master tier or whatever, you know, that's a different ball game. You can't compare someone getting to master and then a professional athlete. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like they're not in the same thing.
Yeah. There's effort applied, obviously, to get the master process and everything in PR. And, you know, you're probably confident in your abilities, that sort of stuff, but yeah, when you're in that, at the end of the day, you don't, your livelihood's not reliant on
that's
this.
That's right. And it's a different ballgame.
Yeah. It's entirely, and you're going to get cut. Like,
yeah.
There's just not all those external factors.
Yeah. And I feel like it gets a bit messy at the professional level. Like, I feel like there is an ego, and they probably are on that side of, they need to have an ego to some degree. And then I feel like there are some people that just manage that ego really well and others that don't. But I think that that opens a whole nother can of worms that I don't think we covered today, but it's there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but even for the top athletes as well, you know, there is process, you know, we talk a lot of the NFL teams and stuff like that, you know, like it's not like
it's all process.
It's all process. That's right.
It's actually all process. I saw this really interesting video on YouTube about that famous physicist or whatever scientist, that Richard Feynman guy. And like people say he's like one of the most, you know, like intelligent people. And then he actually said like there's no such thing as like special, there's no special people. He said that what it all is just incredibly hard-working people who get obsessed about a thing
and spend
all their time and energy focused on it.
On that one thing, yeah.
Like, that is what creates special.
What we view as special.
It's not actually, they're not, like, he's like even here, like, him is, like, people viewed him as, like, this special individual. He's like, I'm not special. I just got obsessed about, you know, physics, whatever it was, for an incredible amount of time and put all my time and effort and sacrificed everything for this. And that's my output, you know? I thought that was interesting as well.
Love it. All right, next question here comes from Chase. The title of this email is Taking Ranked Seriously. Hey, Nathan and Curtis, I'm a fairly new listener and only recently started trying to improve. I've been playing since season one and definitely believed in the concept you guys talk about, but I've never really put full effort into reviews and limiting myself to 3 games a day. This all changed when I listened to your podcast and really started to dig into the narratives I have as a player. The episode that hit the hardest was when you guys looked at the way Freak reviews his games. I was like, hey, study on Freak.
Have we done this question?
No.
Oh, okay.
I look exactly like Freak when I review my games and focus way too much on the parts that don't matter, like my build or analyzing if I could have outplayed someone when I shouldn't have even been there in the first place. Mm. I finally decided 2 weeks ago to seriously sit down and take my ranked game seriously. And so far, I've climbed up to Platinum 2 after being stuck Gold 1, Gold 2 this whole season with Azir, who is by far my favorite mage. Thanks to the concepts you guys talk about, I can actually sit down and look at games objectively and see where I went wrong. I can actually listen to better players when they review my games now and see where they're coming from. He says, sorry for the long email, just wanted to share my story because after being hard stuck for the better part of 11 years, I'm finally improving. I'll update at the end of the season with my final rank.
Yeah, I mean, classic example of, you know, he wasn't ready to even get into the details. Like, you got to be ready and you got to like, it's a decision you need to make, you know, like it's so easy to do a fake process or just scrape the surface without really wanting to learn. Right. And that's in order to learn, it's a decision. It's a decision to be open-minded and be curious. It's a decision to want to learn.
It's a decision to ask high quality questions.
It is. It's a decision to listen to other people. Right. And you have to be willing to make that decision.
Hmm.
And you got to be vulnerable in a way. And that's hard. So yeah, I mean, congratulations that you finally, I'm happy to hear that you finally been open enough to kind of make that leap, and it's not easy doing it for the first time.
All right, next question here comes from Jake. The title of this email is Exhaustion After One Game. Hello, Nathan and Curtis. Love the show. Thanks for making my days at work go by faster every week. My name is Reiki from the MLA. I'm curious about an issue I'm currently having after my games. I'll play a game, and if the game is close, win or lose, I'll be mentally exhausted after the one game and continue to be exhausted for several minutes after. I want to keep my block process going, but I physically need to sign off my account and step away from the PC for over an hour before I feel ready to be emotionally vulnerable to the effort I'm going to put into my next game. I cannot tell if I'm just coping and this is a form of ranked anxiety, or if this is a legit feeling that I can't get over. Have you ever had a client experience this? Do you guys think that this is me just being too emotionally invested in the outcome of the game, and win or lose, it affects me dramatically? Thoughts, please.
I think there are many aspects here that we can talk about. I think that I know you, Nathan, are a massive advocate of just play again,
pushing through,
even if you're playing with lower intensity.
Yes.
Right. And training yourself.
The human will adapt.
Naturally adapting.
The human body.
Right? So I know you're a big fan. And I think that's a really good point to make here.
Mm.
I think that, you know, I think the severity of how like emotionally taxing a game is a sign that you're over dramatizing that one game, like catastrophizing that one game. Yeah. Or
it's life or death.
It's life or death. This is it. This is the gladiator arena. If I lose this game, it might, you know, this LP or that, or, you know, the maybe having something to do with the win or loss of the LP or something along those lines, right? In which you probably need to do some introspection about. You know, it's just one game. And whether or not you climb in this month, or it takes you 2 months to climb or 3 months to climb, it's not going anywhere. The game's not going anywhere. It's your hobby. You've got years and years and years to play this game. Putting it in perspective, remembering it's the dojo and you're going to get hundreds and thousands of games in, take your time, have a crack. It doesn't need to be perfect. Take a learning or two and move on. That's what embracing that mentality should reduce the emotional fatigue.
That's going to be fun as well. That's remember guys, the journey is awesome. You know, like I see, you know, talking about my journey from this podcast of being coming back, struggling as a delusional diamond player, getting challenged. And I mean, two seasons in a row, I've just hit challenger now this current season. That's awesome. Like the journey getting to that, like that's what I reflect on. I don't care really too much about the end result, you know? And like, if I'm sitting there, like I love the time looking back where I pissed away 3 months, you know, like just fucking around with invades and solo losing my team games and going, playing different type of champs and stuff like that. You know, like that's fun. Like again, put it into perspective and stuff. And you know, league, you know, you can get good at league really quick when things over a long period of time connect together. Yeah. Like I see that a lot with my clients, you know, and like, especially my long-term clients generally have pretty good success. It's the short-term clients that come in with expectations, with like coaching and a program and stuff. They have the big problems, you know?
Yeah. You just got to kind of let go and let it happen and get those games in. And the number one contributing factor to improving a game is getting games in. You've got to play the goddamn game. You've got to play
the game. That's the thing. If you're playing one game and getting exhausted, I mean, this is an issue. We've got to fix it.
And that's where I think Nathan's advice is probably the most pragmatic.
You play three games.
Plays a game no matter rain, hail, or shine.
Three games. You play those three games in that three-game block, and no, I don't care how you're feeling. Execute.
No, but I will say this. Yesterday, I started my block with a really like, it was really like just, you know, those slog fests. Exhausting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I remember I sat there. I waited about, I was talking on Discord, reviewed it, sat there for about 2 minutes, took two deep breaths, go again. Now, I knew I was, you know, pretty exhausted after that one, but as soon as I get into the next and I'm thinking about the next game, it actually just goes away.
It does.
Because you're just thinking about what's next? And then you're in a new game, and then you're not even, that game is just gone.
It does.
You know? So I feel like you sometimes by just okay, the analogy to use is like, you know how sometimes you're at the gym and then you think you can't do more one more rep.
And you get into the set and then you can easily...
And then you can just do it. Or like someone says, just do it. Just get under the bar and just like go down. And then you're like, oh, I can.
You're like at number four, you're at number five rep, you know, at number six. You're like, oh, I can do another two here. I didn't even think I could do eight. But now I'm doing eight instead of six.
That's right. Like, but you will never know that until you just...
You got to do it.
Do it.
Sit down.
Sit down and just try it and then just force yourself to do it. I think there's an element of that as well. So yeah, there could be some stage four stuff, but I think for now, a pragmatic response is just get the reps in, and that might even just fix your problem anyway. Yep. Or at least force you to do some more introspection. Either way, I think it's a win-win.
That's right. All right. I think that's it for Mailbag today, everyone. Any final words, Curtis, to check off podcast episode number 162?
Let us know if there are any people that you guys think would be good potential guests, right? Let us know, right? We'll check it out in the comments. And if we think that might be a great fit for the podcast, we'll reach out to them. So yeah, give us some what you guys think. Maybe content creators you follow, whatever, and we'll investigate.
Good work, guys. Let's keep on improving, and we'll see you guys in our next episode.